And we are now live.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Lane Transit District Board of Directors regular meeting. Thank you very much for everyone for being here. Today is Wednesday, September 16th, 5:30 p.m. I call this meeting to order, and we will do a quick roll call. Caitlin Vargas.
Present.
Joshua Scope.
Here.
Don Norden.
Here.
Stephen Yett. He's here.
I'm sorry, present.
Yeah, very good. And Emily Secord, who was here just a moment ago. She will probably be joining us. I believe she is having some internet issues. So we will look forward to her joining us soon. I do have some quick comments as board president. I wanted to take some time to thank the Oregon firefighters and emergency responders who are courageously fighting the wildfires and express great sympathy for those who have lost their homes, been displaced, and just have been harmed by the recent events. I'm also grateful to everyone who is working outside of their homes in the worst air quality ever recorded, and this is on top of a pandemic. I'm also especially grateful to the LTD employees who are out in the field and in our facilities while they keep our transportation system going. I thank you all very much, and I just want you to know your service will not be forgotten. Now for a quick update for the rest of the board regarding the general manager's community surveys for the annual evaluation. I hope those are going well, and I just want to give a quick reminder that those are due to Camille by September 21st. And so if you haven't done so already, I would say it's a good time to send a reminder to your community contact or to go ahead and have that phone or video conference conversation with that person to get that information. So thank you very much to my fellow board members for doing that work. And with that, we'll go to comments from the general manager. AJ, do you have any comments?
First, I want to definitely thank you, Carl, for acknowledging our employees and the work that they are doing to support the community during this challenging time, not only COVID-19, but during the fires. Our staff is responding to any requests for evacuation or for returning them back to their home. We've been using our ride source vehicles and also been using our transit buses, and our employees have been responding quickly. We continue to receive requests for transportation, and we will continue to support the community during this time. We really thank our employees for taking this on despite the many challenges and despite the hazardous conditions, as you mentioned, Carl. So I want to thank you for acknowledging. I also want to thank the board of directors for their continued support and allowing us to really partner with our community to serve. The generosity throughout the community has really been outstanding, and it's nice to see us all coming together. So thank you. One announcement on that is that we'll be sending an email to the board of directors asking for which date, if possible, would be preferred, Tuesday or Wednesday, for an executive session to deal with some of our a personnel matter topic. And we'll have Kristen, our attorney, also assist us with that executive session. But we definitely want to put it on your radar in case you have a preference. So an email will go out shortly so that you can respond. Thank you.
Thank you very much, AJ, and thank you for your leadership during these times. And now to the rest of the board, announcements and additions to the agenda. And this is also a moment if you want to take a few sentences to say a few words about anything, this would be a good time to do it. And I can see people. Oh, yes. Go ahead, Caitlin.
Oh, I just had, it's not an addition. I just was kind of reading over the material and looking over what staff has been doing. And I just wanted to commend staff for working right now in this very challenging environment. Just lots of stuff piled on them. And there's just some really great projects still being pushed forward and really great work being done. And, you know, it's important that we're really transparent right now. As an agency and as staff in the board. And I think the staff is doing a good job of just really being transparent and making sure the community understands what LTD's priorities are, what's being worked on, and why the decisions are being made that are being made. So I just wanted to give a shout out to the staff right now.
Thanks, Caitlin. Anybody else? Oh, yes. Go ahead, Josh.
Yeah, I mean, Caitlin pretty much said it, but I just want to say that for a lot of people who can't do their jobs and just stay home and who, you know, are doing their jobs out in dangerous conditions, it's just, it's a really big deal and it's a huge service to the community. And I think about that, not obviously just from the standpoint of the pandemic, but just the crazy air pollution that you noted, Carl, from the fires. Is so a huge thank you to staff and everyone at LTD working hard right now. Thank you.
Thanks, Josh. Any other comments from any other board member? Don, yes. I see you. Oh, yes. Go ahead, Stephen.
Don, you want to go first? Go for it.
Oh, no. Sorry. I intended to be mute.
Carl, may I proceed?
Oh, please go ahead.
I want to echo what you said, what AJ said, and Josh and Caitlin. Thank you to the staff. Certainly tough times. Also want to make sure that we do a special call out to our partners at the ATU who are also on the front line here doing great work in the same tough, challenging conditions that LTD staff is also doing such a fine job. So to both sides of the fence, kudos and thank you.
Thanks, Stephen. Just to double check, any announcements or additions? Great. Moving on, board calendar. AJ, do you have any board calendar announcements for us?
Nothing notable, just the regular topics.
Excellent. Then let's proceed to the employee of the month. And I believe we have Sean Bradley who will be presenting to us. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. I am pulling him over right now.
Excellent. Thank you.
Sean, you're on. Go right ahead.
I'm
Hi, Sean, just checking in. I don't know if you knew you were on mute.
Camille, can you switch it back to not screen share so we can see the speaker, please?
Yeah.
Hi, Sean. This is Carl, just checking to see if you can hear me. And if you speak back or to unmute your microphone.
It looks like we're having a little technical issue. I keep trying to unmute him and it's not unmuting.
Would it be a good idea to move on and then we can always loop back?
Let me try pulling Jake.
Oh, sure.
Over and see if he can pick this up.
Will do. Thanks, Sean. I know you tried.
No, you'll do it.
Okay. Jake, you're on. You're good to go.
Can you hear me?
Go ahead, Jake. We can. Go ahead.
Well, we anticipated technical difficulties, so I actually have Sean here. I brought him over to my office, so he's going to go ahead and present the Employee of the Month. Hello, everybody. I'm Sean Bradley. I'm a field supervisor, operations supervisor for LTD. The person I'm presenting is Philip Taylor. Philip will be the August Employee of the Month, I think. It says on here September, but I'll say August, because that's what I think that we have. Anyway, Philip was hired as a bus operator February 24th of 2017. And during that time, Philip was recently awarded his third year consecutive Safe Driving Award. Philip also excels in attendance, customer service, and professionalism in his daily duties. Philip was recognized by fleet management as well as a coworker for taking initiative. Philip suggested an airflow improvement to passenger windows on LTD's 6200 series buses. Philip's suggestion was due to a concern that if the air conditioning system failed in the 6200 series buses, windows would not be open, not be able to be open to allow airflow throughout the bus. Philip recommended to fleet management that some windows could be replaced in the 6200s by using the aging 300 series buses. Here's an example of Philip's desire to help with a noted problem within our buses. Thank you, Philip. Well done and well deserved. I'm not sure if Philip is joining us. Did Philip join us?
He was here a second ago.
Oh.
It looks like he may have dropped off.
Okay. Well, anyway, Philip has always been one to care for his coworkers, passengers, and LTD. Philip is a very smart individual, but very humble in his behavior. Philip is well-liked amongst his peers and will go out of his way to help ops if necessary. He is an outstanding operator, and LTD is fortunate to have Philip as an employee.
So, yeah, Philip was hoping to join. He was at home. He had some family issues that he had to take care of. So he was trying to connect, and that might have spilled over, and he might have had to do something. But anyway, he really hoped to be here, but just couldn't make it, it sounds like.
Well, thank you for that update, Jake. And Sean, thank you very much for that presentation. I just want to say a few words on behalf of the board, Philip. I know you're not here and can't hear this, but if you were to visit the minutes or the video, please note that we really appreciate your service. We're very glad to be able to include the employees of the month back into our meetings, and because I think it is important and to honor our employees and to recognize good work. And I really appreciate, I think we all appreciate that you were very concerned about our passengers and riders' comfort and safety. And so that is really great. And we have some nice things for you that I believe HR will be able to provide to you outside of this meeting to thank you for your service and for being our employee of the month. So thank you very much there. Thank you again, Jake and Sean. And we will proceed to our next meeting item, which is audience participation. Camille, I'm guessing we probably do have some people, so I'll go ahead and start reading the public comment note. I see some hands raised on the attendee side, so I'll go ahead and read this right now. So this part of the agenda is reserved for members of the public to address the board on any issue. Please note the following instructions. To indicate that you would like to provide testimony, please use the raise your hand button. For those of you attending by phone only, please press *9 on your phone to raise your hand. When it is your turn to speak, your name will be called. For those attending via phone only, the last 4 digits of your phone number will be called. Please state your name, city of residence, and who you are representing for the audio record. And once you have provided testimony, your hand will be lowered. Please don't raise your hand again because we're only providing one opportunity to speak for each person. For those who are unable or not wanting to speak publicly, testimony may be provided via email at clerk@ltd.org. In fact, many of you have taken advantage of that, and we do get those messages and we do read them. So thank you for submitting your comments via email. And then public testimony is limited to 3 minutes per community member. A timer will be displayed on the screen and will beep when the 3 minutes are up. So I won't be giving you a verbal or oral warning about your time being up. So I'm going to count on you to either look at the screen. I will let you know, of course, when the 3 minutes are up. And with that being said, so remember, go ahead and raise your hand on the computer or press *9 on your phone. Camille, who do we have as our first audience participant?
We have, bear with me 1 second here. We have Jess Roshak up first. Jess, you are live. Go ahead.
All right. Can you all hear me? Okay.
We can. Go ahead, Jess.
Thank you. Good evening. And it's good to see some of you again. And you cannot see me, is that correct?
We cannot. We can definitely hear you.
So the Zoom webinar interface, I want to speak to. I've been coming to a lot of these meetings now since March. And it's good to a limited extent for broadcasting board meetings, but I really hope I don't have to tell you this. I'm sure you're all up to your ears with it as well. It's not sufficient to meet the bar of public engagement that we would need to listen, for you to listen, for you to involve and collaborate or empower the community with major decisions that I understand might be coming. Zoom webinar is so limited that you can't see me. Other audience members can't see me. They don't know who I am. They don't know I'm here. You don't have to respond in any way, shape, or form. They don't, I can't see who else is here. I can't see anybody else here other than the videos of those who are going. And Camille, the host, is controlling this all. And I don't know whether you can even see the names of the public or how many participants may be here. The participants sure can't see each other. And at times, many times, in fact, you probably know, but when board members are speaking, the audio quality is so poor on their computer's end is that the content is often lost. And as we just experienced with the presentation, it's a very difficult forum, like everybody knows. And beyond these technical issues, I'm sure you know, the public's hands are so much more than tied at this historical moment in Oregon. Between public and private disasters upending so many lives that we know of and we don't know of. I'm sure you guys have been affected personally in so many ways too. It's not news to you. I can only, and by the way, the kind of dedication that you guys have serving during this time, I genuinely from my heart do thank you. And the bus drivers that you guys have are incredible people. I've never met one that isn't amazing. But others in our community are literally not able to participate. Those who are technically able, such as myself, I mean, let's just say people are engaged in the fight of our lives, trying to pay mortgages, teach our kids to read, keep our businesses open. And we don't want to have to look over our shoulder right now to attend LTD meetings, just to tell you how important it is for us to ride the bus again from a bus stop at a reasonable distance from our house once it's advisable for us to leave our house again. It just doesn't seem like a worthwhile endeavor at this moment. It's crazy making and there is no rush. And there are fires, but they have nothing to do with a bus overhaul system. So,
Thank you so much for your
website does today. Say the transit tomorrow decision-making process has been postponed until we can participate in a meaningful way. So please honor that correct philosophy. Thank you.
Thank you so much for taking the time to give us that feedback. Camille, who do we have next?
Next we have Rachel Anderson. Rachel, you're up. Go right ahead.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Please go ahead.
Yes.
Hi, can you hear me? Sorry, I have three kids here at home with me. I want to thank you all for serving, especially the bus drivers who have helped so much and the staff who stepped in to help during evacuations and during this horrific last few weeks. And we're humbled by our public servants who are willing to literally go into the line of a fire and help people get out and move to safe places. So thank you so much. I also spoke last month and I wanted to thank you for the responses to me after the August board meeting. I thank you to Josh and Emily who both emailed me back and engaged me regarding bus access for high risk and low income neighbors in the South Eugene area, which I neglected to note is where I live, and I represented myself. I appreciate those responses so much. I and my neighbors care deeply about this issue and want to help find a way to not neglect vulnerable populations that still, while still helping LTD meet its efficiency and ridership goals. I continue to firmly believe that together we can find a win-win answer. I also wanted to thank our general manager, Aurora Jackson, for her comments during the August board meeting. I and many of my neighbors stayed on for the entire 2.5 hours of the August 19th nail biter as the board debated how to move forward or not to move forward with transit tomorrow. We agree with the board members that stated that all of the assumptions going into transit tomorrow are totally different now and will likely be drastically different for probably several years. LTD will continue to face significant new challenges during and after this pandemic, such as these historic fires. We are requesting the board to pause implementation of Transit Tomorrow. Also want to note that back in March, the board was briefed on a second Transit Tomorrow possibility. Sometimes it was called a Plan B or a tweaked version of the original proposal. I believe the board was briefed on that in anticipation of that being presented to the public in March. And because of the pandemic, that public presentation never happened. So most of us are just dying of curiosity to know what that plan was, what it looks like. I would ask the board and the general manager if they would please let us see that plan, even if it's something that you don't plan to pursue. It would be very helpful for us to see what was presented and if it had any viability at all. We would love to see that, especially since it is our tax money that helped pay for it. So we'd love to see that. I and many of my neighbors stand ready to work with LTD in finding solutions and plans for LTD and for our community members. And I thank you so much for your service and this chance to talk. And I also want to tell Caitlin her hair looks amazing. So thank you.
Thank you very much for taking the time to talk with us today. Camille, who do we have next?
Next, we have Linda Duggan. And I apologize if I mispronounce your last name.
Go ahead, Ms. Duggan.
Linda, you are ready to go.
Hi, my name is Linda Duggan, and I live in Eugene. Can you hear me?
We can. Go ahead, please.
I'm representing myself today. In addition to providing safe transportation during the COVID-19 pandemic, I especially appreciate LTD helping with the fire evacuees. Focusing on these current precarious and threatening situations should continue to be LTD's priority. Planning ahead into the unknown future should be paused. Right now, providing necessary bus transportation for essential workers, the disabled, and people who have been affected by these horrible events is the agenda. They depend on our mass transit system. Thanks for your diligent work and concern in our community. That's it.
Thank you very much for taking the time to talk with us today. Camille, who do we have next?
Next, we have John Murray.
Thank you, Camille. Hello, John Q. Murray from Eugene, representing myself. Just want to thank all of you, AJ, Philip Taylor, our Employee of the Month, the board, especially Don Norton. Thanks for all the help and support you've given us. All the staff, thank you for the service to our community through these dark and dangerous days. The group asked that we read some quotes from Jarrett Walker. The first one's from his blog written in late May 2020, and the second is from his 2018 article, To Predict with Confidence, Plan for Freedom. While we don't know the future, we have something even better. We have values and goals. These things come from the community we serve, as expressed through their elected leaders, as well as from our own convictions. To tell the transit story in this new world, we will need to think about goals more clearly than ever and discuss them more openly in our communities and at all levels of government. Ridership clearly is no longer the main measure of our success. The crisis has revealed a strong new argument for transit, one we should deploy at anyone who wants to judge us on ridership. Transit has kept us running through the crisis as an essential service, supporting people who work in hospitals, grocery stores, utilities. These mostly low-income people would typically have been called transit dependent. But it is they who are holding civilization together right now. So we are all transit dependent in this sense. What's more, this has always been true. Transit riders have always been part of the basic functioning of our cities. Measuring that role solely with ridership would be like measuring the success of the police by how many arrests they make. The purpose of the police is to provide a base level of security that people can count on. The purpose of transit is to do the same for urban mobility. Transit means that people can go places and thus do things in a way that isn't as harmful or expensive as driving. Imagine, for example, if discussions of transit-oriented development looked at where you could get to if you lived at a proposed site, rather than just whether an attractive transit technology is running nearby. Imagine if equity were understood as the just distribution of freedom to go wherever you want, as only an isochron can measure. Imagine if planning documents spoke respectfully of people's freedom, rather than only of how experts can predict their behavior. Such things are possible. Thank you.
Thank you very much for sharing your thoughts with us today. Camille, who do we have next?
Next we have Bill Bradley. Bill, you're set to go.
Thanks, Camille. Bill Bradley, Springfield, Oregon, representing ATU 757. It was good to hear the public comment earlier. The respect for the bus operators out there moving people around the district as the wildfires and the smoke has poured in on us. And the appreciation for us continuing to run service throughout this COVID-19 pandemic. And that quote that we just listened to about the essential workers that we do move, making everybody transit dependent. I mean, a lot to think about there. So I do appreciate the public comment and the input that they're bringing forward. One thing I do want to bring forward to the board is I appreciate that you guys are taking a look at the budget assumptions you guys had made in the early or late spring, early summertime when you had to make this budget. I think now is an appropriate time to look back and say, do our assumptions come true, and get the best level of input we can now so we can make good decisions going in the future. As I looked through the packet, I saw what I considered positive news, where we are gonna be able to serve our community in a higher level than we initially anticipated. And I think that is great. I think we have an opportunity to build the transit system, build it back better than it was before. We're gonna do that, you know, incrementally and in a prudent way, I'm sure. And ATU will continue to work with LTD management on getting that done. But right now, you know, our operators are out there doing their best to serve the community as true public servants. And we wanna continue to support them. We wanna continue to support the maintenance workers who are making sure the buses are clean, that the filters are all changed, that you know the air in the bus is as clean as it can be. Our customer service is providing the right guidance with this new system that we're running to our riders, and that our public safety officers are out there managing the system to support the operators and support the riding public. So with these things in mind, as we continue to add service, we wanna make sure we're not adding but also compromising any area of safety or public safety as we continue to welcome the public back onto our buses. So I just, you know, look forward to the conversation that you guys are gonna have tonight regarding the budget and some next steps that you're gonna do as we add service. And, you know, decisions you're gonna make in terms of creating a productive system that is gonna be safe for everyone, adding frequency to lines that we're gonna need so we can socially distance folks on our buses. Right now it's a 3-foot social distance mandate from the governor. We wanna be able to maintain that on our buses so everybody that's riding is safe. But right now, I'll just sit back and listen, and thank you guys for being there. Good night.
Thank you so much, Bill. Really appreciate you talking with us today. Camille, do we have any other public participants today?
I am not showing anyone else indicating they would like to speak.
Great. Well, thank you very much, members of the public, for taking the time to visit with us and share your thoughts and opinions. We will go ahead and move on to the next item, which is board member reports. And while we're checking in with board members about reports on the various committees they are part of, could we get Mary Ann over to do the strategic planning committee brief report?
Absolutely. I will bring her over right now.
Great. Thank you. And in the meantime, while we're doing that, is there anything in addition to what is printed in the packet that any board member would like to speak on? Great. I think with Mary Ann, we'll go ahead and get her committee's report then. Welcome, Mary Ann.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. So I just wanted to do a very quick update about SPC and what we discussed last month. So we had kind of an abbreviated agenda. We talked a little bit about STIF funding, which I know you all will discuss here in the next coming months. And we also talked about the several vacancies that we've had on SPC. So I just wanted to come before the board and let you know that SPC supports the full slate of candidates that are up for nomination. They sound like excellent folks, and we're really looking forward to working with them. So wanted to let you know that. And then we also just wanted to talk about the role of SPC a little bit. And it's really to discuss specific topics. That's our goal. So the reason I'm saying this is as we're talking about transit tomorrow, I'm talking about rethinking it, rebooting it, whether to start it, how to start it, other pieces of information. Those are things that SPC is really excited to talk about, and you know, that's because it's our mandate, we have the time to do that. So I just wanted to signal to all of you that that's what we really want to spend our time on, is talking about those specific issues. So if we can be helpful as you're making your decisions, not just for transit tomorrow, but for any of it, we're here. So thank you. Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you very much, Mary Ann. Just to check in with board members, were there any questions or things that people wanted to state about the SPC and what Mary Ann had stated? Okay, great. Mary Ann, thank you very much. And thank you for your service on SPC.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, moving on. Our next item is the consent calendar. And I just wanted to make sure people knew the contract committee did review a specific IGA, an intergovernmental agreement with Cottage Grove that we just went ahead and pulled it from the consent. So that will not be voted on, but it is something that we, if you look on your agenda item, that's coming up in two items. So I just want to make sure that was clear that was outside of the consent calendar. Josh, did you want to go ahead and make a comment about that?
Actually, I was just going to comment about the Trapeze contract, which is still on the consent calendar, but if people browsed it, they probably saw big dollar values, and I just wanted you to know that, just following on what Carl said, the contract committee had a long conversation about that, and I think the resulting AIS that staff produced is totally responsive to the requests we had about getting a little bit more clarity. So not an optional expenditure as we viewed it. I just wanted the rest of the board to know we did talk about it at length.
No, I appreciate that. Thank you for mentioning that. Yeah, and if any time a board member has a question or a comment they want to make about the consent calendar, that's totally appropriate and fine to bring up. And that being said, are there any questions or comments that people would like to make about what's in the consent calendar? Okay, well, in that case, I will entertain a motion. On page 8. Someone wants someone else to do it.
Okay, I got it here. Sorry. Wrong document. A lot of documents for tonight. The right one. I move adoption of LTD resolution number 2020-09-16-051. Hereby resolved that the consent calendar for September 16, 2020 is approved as presented.
Second.
Great. It's been moved by Josh and seconded by Stephen.
Kristen, can I interrupt quickly?
Please do. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I was having a hard time also getting to the page number. So maybe Mark can confirm this, but in the resolution for the Trapeze contract, Mark, it lists $315,000, and I want to make sure that that amount was correct and that it didn't need to increase?
There was a new resolution sent in today. And so it should be either in the packet, and Camille could confirm where that is. And yeah, it's 365, not 315.
Yeah, and it's on the website. So, yeah, it's all there. Sorry, but it was updated. Thank you for bringing that up, Kristen.
Okay, thank you.
Sorry, I'm having a little technical difficulty where I keep my audio seems to be going in and out. It sounds like the question was resolved. Okay, good deal. Sorry about my glitch. Hopefully that doesn't cause a problem. So going back to the vote, so we'll go ahead and vote on the motion to approve the consent calendar. We'll go ahead and start with Caitlin Vargas.
Aye.
Joshua Scove.
Aye.
Don Norden.
Aye.
Stephen Yett.
Aye.
Emily Secord. Oh, right, Emily's not here. I kept thinking she was here, been able to join in. Camila, just in case, if could you look and see if she's in the main attendee list?
I did check, and I have not seen her pop up.
Gotcha, thank you. Great, so she's not present. I, Carly, vote aye, so motion passes. Thank you very much for that, and the next item on the list is, sorry, I got to scroll back, is the board member committee assignments. If you go to page 90, so you got to scroll way over or page down quite a bit, you'll see a copy of where we stand right now with board committee assignments. One position I am trying to fill is the ad hoc sustainability committee. So far I've got Josh and Don on it, and Josh and Don, I assume you two both still want to remain on that committee. Excellent. Do I have a volunteer for a third member? Otherwise I have to put someone in.
I think Emily volunteers because she's not on the call. Isn't that how it works?
That's what I was going to say.
Is that how it works? Caitlin, were you interested by any chance?
No, Carl, I don't think it's the right fit for me, to be honest, but I appreciate you asking. Thank you so much.
No problem. Great. Then in that case, I will approach Emily about that. And let me just make sure there wasn't anything else. Was there anything on the current board committee assignments that people want to discuss or have changed? Yes, go ahead, Josh.
Yeah, I just was wondering whether I don't know how to say this exactly. Some of these committees are dormant at best, and then others feel kind of high stakes. So, Carl, I was hoping maybe you would say a little bit about the MPC and maybe by extension, OMPOC. I don't know if to see if you could, sort of give us a sense of what your plan is there, but then also some of these other things have not met in a long time, and I don't know whether we even want to carry them. It's in this sort of a document, like the ad hoc communications committee was, it felt like very ad hoc. We got together, we met a few times, we had some specific tasks. I'm not sure it really needs to still exist. So I think it's great to have a document like the one that's in the packet, but maybe we're responsible for a little bit of cleanup. What do you think?
Okay. No, you're right. And especially during our current circumstances, some of these will be more dormant than normal, so to speak. So I will take that feedback and work on maybe developing a more accurate list for the reality that we live in currently, if I understand you correctly. Yeah, and thank you for bringing up MPC. That is a position I do need to fill. If there are people who are interested, this would be a good time to let me know, or you can let me know outside of the meeting. So I forgot to mention that one. And as for OMPOC, actually, I do have an update, which is that I was elected to represent MPC at OMPOC through the rest of this calendar year. So any comments or questions? Great. And I will work on developing a cleaner, more reality-based list, or current situation list. It's not like, it's not that's unreal, for the a future meeting, hopefully the next one. Okay, so then let's move on to the IGA amendment with the City of Cottage Grove Mobility on Demand. I believe John is going to do a brief presentation for us, and you'll see why the and I believe some of the, probably the contract committee will talk a little bit about why we thought it was important to make sure the rest of the entire board was aware of this. Is John? Oh, there we are. Go ahead, John, whenever you're ready.
Great, thanks everyone. Good evening, members of the board. I'm John Allen, LTD Successful Services Program Manager, and I'm here today to discuss the future of the Cottage Grove Connector, our mobility on demand pilot project service being provided within the Cottage Grove city limits. I should have a presentation on screen. Is that visible to everyone?
It is.
Great, perfect. So we've had opportunities to review this service together in the past, and so much of this information we've reviewed together, but I want to ensure we can continue our conversation based on current events in our post-COVID world. So in March, as part of our COVID response, LTD put several services on hiatus and requested members of the public only travel when there's an essential need. So this included our MOD pilot project in Cottage Grove, as it was both not intended as lifeline service and because of some potential safety concerns. This service was primarily funded using STIF funds, which continue to remain available to us. We're now past the expected pilot program end date, but we don't have the benefit of the data and results we would normally expect because we had such a long gap where we provided no service. Now that we know more and been able to implement safety precautions, such as requiring masks, opening windows for airflow, temperature checking drivers, and maintaining social distancing on our vehicles, we made the decision to resume service. So we do have some additional data, and I'll share that with you shortly. However, we're here to request an extension today to the pilot program period to collect data as we normally would have prior to the service halt. So in particular, we've also resumed service using the 98 loops through the City of Cottage Grove, and we need time to evaluate how these services work together. Our request extends the pilot program period through the end of the current fiscal year, June 30th, 2021. We anticipate that this would result in an additional $35,220 required to fulfill the extension, which would be fully funded using STIF grant funds, which have already been allocated and budgeted towards this purpose. So currently the service is dispatched either through an app or by calling our service contractor directly. The service offered by the technology provider is a separate contract which will be available for public procurement and is not otherwise a part of the agenda item before you today. Current service operates from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. weekdays and costs a very reasonable buck a trip, picking you up and taking you anywhere within the Cottage Grove city limits. This is our total number of passengers served. What's new to you today is the 2020 data, basically the last 3 months, where you see our otherwise positive trends reversing as COVID ramps up. We halted service in mid-March, so it's also lower because it's not reflective of a full month's data. And here's the cost per boarding. The huge spike in March is generally correlated due to the costs associated with an unexpected shutdown of service. This is our passenger per ride data, which is reflective of how many shared trips took place. And these are our wait times. Generally 10 minutes is a normal wait time to get picked up. Most people in this graph we're seeing are preferring to call in a ride rather than use the app. And this was a concession from modern technology to accommodate those who didn't have access to book a trip through a smartphone or an internet-connected PC. And here we can see where we've been picking people up. We have the ability to get a bit more granular with this data through our technology provider, but the heat map shows we're picking lots of people up from Walmart and downtown. And similarly, this shows where we've been taking people, usually Walmart. So I've already presented this data in the past, but I wanted to quickly remind the board that we've done quantitative and qualitative surveys to find out what people are using the service for, what's working, what isn't, and also to help us look at trends and build in further efficiencies and try new things we couldn't ordinarily do on fixed route service. So very quickly, I just wanted to present that just as a refresher. But with that, staff recommends adopting this amendment, continuing the pilot project as presented, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you so much for that presentation, John. First I want to start with the contract committee members. Did you have want to kind of introduce this topic a little bit to the rest of the board members?
I think I'm the only other contract committee
member
right now.
So I'm on the spot.
Well, but I'll just say really quickly, and then I'm very curious to hear from Caitlin and Don and Stephen, if you have other comments or questions about this. I think we viewed this as picking up a pilot that was not quite finished, as John said, and that we wanted to follow through on this, get complete as much as we can, complete data, so we can inform ourselves about how this mode works, and then sort of revisit it more fully. John's been back to talk to us a couple of times about this, I think, before, less than a year ago, I think back in December. So we have heard about this, but we want to keep it fresh and be thinking about it. And then the other point that I think a couple of us made at the contract committee is that right now there's a real premium on thinking beyond just 40-foot buses, or I should maybe just beyond fixed route service, I should say. And so thinking about other ways that we can help people meet transportation needs. And so it seemed like a bad time to just pull the plug on a pilot. And we kind of wanted to keep understanding how people are moving around and how we can help them. So that was the reason to keep going. But we still need to revisit this over time. So anyway, that's...
Yeah, if I could add...
Go for it.
Oh, I was going to say, I want to make sure Emily and Josh had to speak. I kept forgetting that Emily's not in the room right now. I'll go ahead and add my two cents, as it were. One of the reasons I felt it was important that the full board got to see this is that, one, the contract committee does, I think, a great job of reviewing contracts. A lot of the contracts are fairly mundane. They may have large dollar amounts attached to them. Actually, some of them are way more than this particular IGA, but they're kind of necessary. Kind of nuts and bolts, if you will, type contracts. But this one is an IGA, which I thought was really important for the board to have a little bit more access to thoughtfulness with. And a second reason that's eluding me right now. I think it goes to the point that Josh accurately said what the rest of the committee had said, which was that this is potentially could be a useful model and important part of our overall strategy for the future. And so it's another reason why the full board should have be reviewing it. So not to lose sight of what we're trying to do today, I believe that the contract committee, we would have forwarded it on to the rest of the board with the recommendation for approval. So this is just to make sure that everyone is aware of it. And so it's also an opportunity for the whole board to be able to vote a certain way on it. And so this would be a good time for questions to either the contract committee or especially to John about it. And then we can all entertain a motion and then we can go ahead and vote on it. So I will, looking around there, is there anyone who would like to? Oh, Stephen, I'm sorry. I just noticed your hand was up. Go ahead. And then Don next.
I think Don had his hand up first. So Don, go for it. I'll follow you.
Sounds great.
Well, I had a question for John, and just in the way the Transloc program is working. We looked at the graph of the pickup times and got around 10 minutes, up to 50 minutes at some times. But I'm wondering if there's a corresponding number for the leave-off times, because I've heard anecdotally that some people get picked up in 10 minutes, but then end up riding in circles for a half an hour before they can get out because of the way the Transloc program delivers. And I'd wondered if there had been any adjustments in that program or and we're just using it as it was when we purchased or we rented it or whatever we did last year. So I wonder if John had any comments about that.
That's a great question. Thank you. So it certainly is something that we've been monitoring and has been part of our service. So another one of the statistics that we've put forward is the number of shared rides. And so there is some balance between having a service like this be a shared ride service with an expectation that we'll pick people up along the way and trying to be as efficient as possible using an algorithm that we've essentially contracted through our technology provider. I think certainly as the pilot program has moved forward, one of the things that we've discussed is the technology portion. And again, that isn't a part of the service that or of the amendment that's put forward today. But that's something that's going to be available for public bidding. And certainly one of the things that as an organization we can evaluate as part of that process are things like the typical onboard wait time as part of the service as defined by the algorithm being used by the technology provider. So I think that's both been something that's been on our radar and will continue to be, I think, an important performance metric. So I can both ensure that we're collecting and as we're able, having that data available to the board. But I also wanted to note that the technology portion, while it's not a part of the agenda item that's before you, it is something that we're evaluating as part of the overall program.
So it's just technology as we have, as they have presented it. There's no adjustment possible here. So we get somebody who's on a mobility device and they get off on the wrong side of the street. There's no adjustment for that.
We currently do have the means to make manual adjustments in this program. So one of the things that's fairly unique in what we've been trying in Cottage Grove is that we have human dispatchers that are monitoring traffic and can make real-time adjustments as needed. So this also allows us to have members of the public who are able to call in rather than exclusively using an app on a smartphone. So we do have the ability to make changes in real time if we notice that something's happening that's not making sense. So if we disagree with how the algorithm is dispatching a trip or if someone's been on a vehicle for what we perceive to be too long, we do retain the ability to make adjustments as needed.
Okay, thank you.
Great. Next we have Stephen and then followed by Josh.
Thanks, Carl. And thanks, John, for your presentation. Appreciated. Quick question regarding cost, and don't need this now, of course, but at some time in the future, could you present to the board a breakout of what is a fixed cost and what's a variable cost that goes into these numbers, please? That would be very helpful. And also, if you can just offer a little bit of further detail on both of those also would be much appreciated. Thank you.
Of course, that's great feedback, and I'll make sure that we have that data at your made available to you.
Great. Go ahead, Josh.
Thanks. Actually, this is, I think, more than tangentially related to Stephen's comment. I just to sort of remind everyone some of the things that we said when we talked about this back in, I think it was December of 2019. When you look at cost per boarding for the connector, it's, I guess one way that we talked about it is it's kind of like, it's substantially more than fixed route service, the average for fixed route service, but it's way less than, you know, a cab ride, much less something like RideSource. So it's in this nether region. And I guess the reason that I'm excited that we're doing this is that we're teaming with some industry leaders. Transloc is in many ways unique in North America and is sort of partnering with more companies over time. And I think there's real promise, but I do think, I mean, to Stephen's, if I read your comment right, Stephen, I think, you know, we really need to look at this closely because this style of microtransit can be really expensive and maybe not actually the most efficient way for us to deploy resources. So I think we should keep trying it, and I think we should approve this, and we should sort of wrap up the pilot genuinely. But I think we should all say, oh, the vote's still out on exactly how we're doing it, and maybe we need to tweak this over time. So I think that's certainly the way, that's my expectation, is that we'll try to refine this as we go, but we'll never get to that point of refining if we don't learn from pilots like this one. So thank you to staff for continuing to innovate.
Very good. Just checking, make sure any other board members have any questions or comments. If not, I will entertain a motion. That's on page 93.
Well, I'm there. So I move adoption of LTD resolution number 2020-09-16-053. Hereby resolved that the LTD Board of Directors, acting as the LTD Contract Review Board, approves amended IGA number 2019-07 as presented.
Second.
Great. It was moved by Josh, seconded by Stephen. We'll do a roll call vote, starting with Caitlin.
Aye.
Josh Scove.
Aye.
Don Norden.
Aye.
Stephen Yet.
Aye.
And I, Carl Yeh, vote aye as well. So motion passes. John, thank you very much for taking the time to do that presentation for us and for the good work that you do.
Of course, thanks to the board, and I appreciate it.
Thanks. Okay, we're gonna move on to our next item, which is a policy update regarding the diversity policy, and I believe, is it going to be David and Colina presenting?
Yes, that's correct. They're just getting their
no problem.
Audio.
Whenever you're started. Ready.
David, I can start if you need me to.
That'd be great, Colina. Why don't you go ahead and start?
Thank you. This evening, we're bringing before you an update to the diversity policy. Back in 2004, when David first started with LTD, he was given the charge to develop a diversity council. That started in 2004, I believe, and then over the course of time, they were able to, David, along with eight other employees who were comprised out of both our operations and administrative sides of the district, developed a policy that was presented to the board, and that was in 2007. So the board adopted this policy that we have here in your AIS under history. That's the title, the LTD's 2007 diversity policy. Earlier this year in June, as a result of a lot of the social unrest and some of the conversation taking place in the community, AJ brought us together as a diversity council, opening it up to all employees to just address things that were going on, but also to give us a new charge. And so while we had been working on at the time that she called us together, we had been working on updating our diversity plan and updating how we thought we would begin to implement the 2007 diversity policy. AJ gave us a new charge. And so that charge was, first of all, to take a look at every single policy that we have at the district to make sure that there weren't any things that we were doing, whether that's on a policy level, on a procedure level, in terms of standard operating procedures that would lend to systemic exclusion of anyone that is within those classes historically underutilized or historically underrepresented. And then the second part of the charge that she gave us was to, once we had taken a look at the policies, procedures, standard operating procedures, to then begin to work toward implementation of a plan that would create an inclusive environment here at the district. And that's across the board. And so the first step that we're taking is we looked at this policy, the diversity policy. And in looking at the policy, we did quite a bit of research. The new council, and it's not necessarily new, but we've expanded it. So it still includes members from our operations and our administrative team, but we have a sort of what we call a working group, which are advisors, and they're not full-time members of the Diversity Council, but they have an interest in the work that we're doing and also some expertise in the various policy areas that we're taking a look at. And so in our research, we found that there's been a lot of development since 2007 in terms of the discussion, the conversation regarding diversity, equity, and inclusion. And so the first thing that we're bringing before the board tonight is a recommendation to change the name of the policy to include some of the things that are currently being discussed. And that is to broaden that name from just diversity policy to diversity, equity, and inclusion policy. And then the second thing is to provide definitions of that, right? Because in the discussion, everybody has their own idea of what diversity means, of what equity means, of what inclusion means. And so we've used definitions that have been provided to us through some of the sources. And what, and the main source that we've utilized in our policy is from the cooperative extension that's in partnership with Tuskegee University. And we have those definitions listed here, and those will be outlined in the policy. So if you're looking at your agenda item summary under considerations, we've outlined what the new policy is that we would recommend. And then not only have we provided definitions, but we've also given examples of what we believe are how we could implement creating a diverse, equitable, and inclusive environment internally and externally in the district and outside of the district with our customers. And then after that, our plan is to then begin to update the plan that we had been working on, but now we're having a reboot and starting afresh, taking a new eyes and taking a new look at that. And so our recommendation is to for the board to adopt this updated policy, diversity, equity, and inclusion, with the new definitions and the plan. And I'm open for any questions if anyone has any.
Thank you so much, Kalina. With that, are there any board members with questions or comments for Kalina and or David? And while we're waiting for that, just checking, Camille, is the new person on the phone? Is that Emily?
No, that is David on his phone.
Yeah.
Oh, that's David. Okay. Gotcha. Yes. So the person on the phone is David. Great. We have Josh who has his hand raised. Go ahead, Josh.
I just wanted to say thank you to staff for doing this incredibly important work and for kind of bringing us into the 21st century in a kind of policy and procedure sense. So thank you so much, Kalina and David, and also AJ for leading the way on this. The only thing I would ask for, and I guess it's not now, because I think it sounds like this is the step and sort of part of the process. I would ask to hear at the board level at some point what sort of policies either we need to consider or what sort of policies are getting implemented, you know, a tier down from us that can make sure that this is not just window dressing. As I think you all know well, there are a lot of concerns that get adopted by big organizations in a well-meaning way, but without sort of, you know, policies that end up being without teeth, without a real mm-hmm. impact. And so we should kind of put this on our recurring agenda and make sure that we're circling back at the board level to make sure that this is moving ahead meaningfully. But otherwise, thank you so much, and I appreciate your work very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I see Caitlin's hand is up. Go ahead, Caitlin.
Oh, I just wanted to respond to Josh really fast. I agree with you, but at an oversight level, I just want to make sure that we're not getting in the weeds. And when it comes to operations, just directing that. So let's just be mindful when it comes to what type of policies, that it's really more of a governance oversight thing. I just want to make sure we're not bogging staff down with operational stuff, we don't need to. Does that make sense?
That makes so much sense that that's exactly why I said it at the policy level. Like, what do we need to do? I mean, just as with sustainability, we've tried to figure out, like, what do we need to do at our level that is necessary for us to move forward? The same thing with this. Yeah, no interest from me in getting into these weeds. I just want to make sure that we clear the path wherever we can.
Okay, thank you.
Great. I want to throw my comments in. I just want to say how pleased I am about the work that was done. Colleen, I know especially you've shown great leadership in this area, and I also want to compliment David and AJ too. But this is tremendous, and I really appreciate that we're doing this, especially in light of all, like you had mentioned, all of the things that have happened this year, especially. And I think back to the vandalism that occurred at the Reynolds station. That was, I think, one of the reasons, not the only reason, of course, but you know, that I think hopefully fueled some of this work. And I just want to say I wholeheartedly support this resolution, and just wanted to make that known. But thank you again. Any other quick comments? Any other comments, and I will entertain a motion. Or otherwise, I will entertain a motion. And a possible motion is on page 97. Yeah, just so everyone knows, since I'm filling time right now waiting for someone to find it,
I feel like I'm just taking all the fun, but I move adoption.
You should.
I move adoption of LTD resolution number 2020-09-16-057. It's hereby resolved that the LTD Board of Directors adopts the updated diversity policy as presented.
Thank you.
Second.
Excellent. So it's been moved by Josh, seconded by Caitlin. We will do a roll call vote. Caitlin?
Aye.
Josh?
Aye.
Stephen? We'll move to Don.
Aye.
Sorry about that, Carl. I was double muted. Aye.
That's okay. Great. I think as we stay, Emily's not here, and I, Carl Ye, vote aye as well. So motion passes. So congratulations. And we look forward to more things coming out of the committee. And I want to note it does say internal and external, so it's covering everything. And so thank you. We look forward to that.
And Josh, you're not stealing all the fun. You're the most organized. That's why you always do it.
Yeah, I was going to make a quick note. You know, the it's listed in our packets as everyone who's at home is following along, and we're not committed to having to read that way. In fact, often we have amended motions and such, but it is very handy and it's very nice to have the language out there. So that is what it is there for. Great, we'll move on to the next item, and it is the financial update. Is Christina, she's already there. Whenever you're ready, Christina.
All right, good evening. In mid-August, we received the first glimpse of our Q4 payroll tax revenues. And on August 27, we met with the Department of Revenue to discuss the preliminary annual results. The information that I'm sharing is the first available opportunity I've had to provide you with an update on the fiscal year 21 financial state of the district. The fiscal year 21 budget was adopted amidst global economic instability driven by the COVID-19 pandemic. The economic environment continues to be fluid, and there are still many unknowns, such as the length and depth of the recession, if there will be additional government stimulus, or the timing of a vaccine or other remedy, to name a few. This update that I'm going to provide you tonight provides a projected annual view based on the best information that we have today about the pandemic, the economy, ridership, and service hours. So today's presentation starts by providing you the context for the fiscal year 21 forecast. I then dive into the forecast and provide a comparison of our forecast to what was originally budgeted. I close by walking you through the uncertainties that still remain. So I cover three things as part of the forecast context. First, how long the recessions have lasted historically. Second, the connection between unemployment and payroll taxes. And lastly, what a sustainable level of revenue service hours are. So each recession is unique, and this pandemic-induced recession has different characteristics than prior recessions. However, historical data is still the best information that we have to determine the potential length of the current recession. It also allows planning for different scenarios. The average recession has lasted about 2 years, and the longest about four. The Oregon Office of Economic Analysis expects today's recession to be slow and to look like a square root with initial bounce back, which we've seen, followed by a very slow growth recovery. So as you will see when I review the fiscal year 21 forecast, the April through June payroll tax reduction was lower than we expected, which has increased our predicted fiscal year 21 payroll tax revenues. Digging deeper into the why, you will see that there are a few factors in play. First, unemployment skewed towards low-wage jobs, resulting in a disproportionately higher unemployment rate than payroll tax revenue decline. And you can see that here with that solid dark line. That's the low-income jobs loss. Some, but not all of these jobs started to recover. So you can see that there's the recovery starting and it sort of flattened out a little. There were fewer higher income jobs lost, which is this small dotted line here. But these jobs show no sign of returning, and actually, they actually went slightly down here in July. The job losses were softened in April through June because of the federal stimuluses, like the 8-week PPP, the 600-week additional unemployment insurance, that one-time federal stimulus checks that they sent out, and the CARES Act support programs. This chart here on the right shows that we still have a ways to go for an economic recovery, and that we are currently around the Great Recession levels in terms of unemployment. So when deciding on service level changes, it is important to consider what level of service is maintainable over time to avoid increases to service that must then be decreased due to reliance on viable fund sources. So before I get into the details, I want to be clear that this model is based on the service levels that are maintainable post-pandemic. If we brought our service levels up to this level today, we would exceed our fiscal year 21 budget because the cost per revenue hour that we are operating at is at a much higher than it was prior to the start of the pandemic. To determine what a sustainable level of service would be, I forecasted our annual incoming resources, excluding federal assistance. In other words, our fixed incoming sources, such as fares, passes, advertising, payroll type taxes, and stiff assistance. These sources total the $49.8 million that you see here. I excluded federal assistance because we only started using federal assistance for operating during the Great Recession. The original intention was to use these federal funds as a stopgap, but we never weaned ourselves off of it, resulting in an aging fleet as federal assistance was being used for operating rather than for community investments like replacing buses. On the expenditure side, I assume that operating transfers to cover grant match for the Medicaid, specialized services, and point-to-point operating funds are unchanged from our fiscal year 21 budget. That's this number here, the $3.6 million. I also assume 2 months of operating reserve and an annual $3 million for grant match for capital projects. The $37 million of remaining funding after accounting for these items are available for fixed route transit services. So that's the $37 million you see here. I then translated the $37 million into revenue hours of service by assuming 166 cost per revenue hour of service. This is the cost per revenue hour that we were operating at prior to the pandemic. In order for the 223,000 revenue hours of service to be sustainable, that's this number here. Without any assistance, we must get back to our 166 cost per revenue hour. In July, our cost per revenue hour of service was 237 per revenue hour. This relatively high cost per service hour is because of pandemic-related leaves and the maintenance of drivers on staff for cleaning in order to maintain public health rather than for driving buses. This next section is the fiscal year 21 forecast based on the information that we have through July. So we updated our forecast based on updated assumptions, which are more optimistic than when the budget was developed in April. The most significant assumption change is around payroll taxes. The budget was developed assuming a multi-peak recovery and an $11.3 million fiscal year 21 reduction in payroll taxes based on the Sustainable Cities Year Project modeling. As presented as part of the context, the payroll tax impact was not as significant as originally projected due to both federal stimulus and the composition of job losses towards the low end. The Sustainable Cities Year Project forecast also expected a 33% peak job loss, but the peak in May was only around 16%. The fiscal year 21 year is still young though, and the pandemic is still raging and the economy is still fragile, so how the year ends is still quite uncertain. The state and new taxes were also up, likely due to CARES Act stimulus dollars being used to cover additional work and overtime to address COVID-19. Forecasted annual requirements are better than adopted due to lower projected annual service hours than budgeted. Offsetting the benefit of the reduction in service hours is the higher than budgeted cost per revenue service hour. The cost per service hour is up under the public health first approach because of the additional COVID-19 specific costs, such as bus operators sanitizing rather than driving, safety equipment like shields, unemployment, and overhead costs spread over fewer revenue hours. Since the budgeted cost per hour was $187 per hour, but the current cost per hour is $237 per hour, it is possible to increase the service hours. But if we increase it as high as the budgeted $254,000, we will exceed the budget. The current projected hours of $202,000 assumes a reduction in the cost per revenue hour to $208 per revenue hour by increasing the number of operators operating buses rather than sanitizing or on COVID leave. $3.8 million of CARES Act dollars have been drawn down to date. And based only on July payroll tax results, which showed a decline of $700,000 from the prior quarter, CARES Act drawdown utilized for fiscal year 21 could range from a low of $1 million to around $4 million just for payroll tax recovery. It is too early to estimate the self-employment tax impacts as the majority of those revenues are received in the April-May timeframe. Our current financial status provides an opportunity to stretch our CARES dollars for an extended recession or for further economic downturns should the economy further decline as the current federal stimulus programs expire. The financial state also allows us to increase service, but I would caution to not increase it beyond a level that can be sustained without federal assistance, as fluctuating service is painful for the community and for the impacted employees. I'd like to close by reminding you of the many uncertainties that remain that make this forecast a work in progress and not a crystal ball. To quote Janet Yellen, if senators still fail to resolve stalled negotiations when they return after Labor Day, millions of needy Americans will suffer, and the overall economy could degrade from its current slow rebound in growth to no growth at all. There are so many uncertainties. Today's forecast is based on annualized service projections. The length of unemployment benefits funded by LTD could change based on federal mandates extending benefits. It is unclear whether there will or will not be additional federal economic stimulus or what the impacts will be of the economy not having a stimulus or additional transit support like the CARES Act. Self-employment tax impacts are unknown until April and May, and this year they were unknown until July because of filing extensions that they had. We do know that small businesses are being disproportionately impacted by the pandemic. Much of my forecast was based on July data only, and as we have seen, so much can change in just 1 month. Lastly, we do not know the length and depth of the pandemic or the semi-permanent damage that it will have to ridership, ridership needs, consumer confidence, and the economic recovery. We do know that a sustaining recovery cannot occur unless the virus is controlled. Thank you so much for your time this evening.
Great.
Christina, thank you so much for putting all of this together. I imagine board members will have some questions for you and want to discuss this further. And I just want to say I appreciate all the work that I know must have gone into putting this all together. First in the queue, I have Caitlin. And if you'd like to follow Caitlin, just raise your hand or wave at me and I'll call you next. Go ahead, Caitlin.
Christina, thank you. That was very interesting and really comprehensive, and I appreciate that. I'm sorry if I missed it, but did you say when you thought we would start collecting fares again? I was just looking at that revenue forecast for 2021, and I didn't catch when you said how the fare collection, when that returns, how that plays into it.
Yeah, so it's based on the assumption that the fares will start being collected after we are in installing the shields for the bus operators. So that's the assumption that I made when I put this together.
Okay, thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. And just to quickly piggyback on that, Christina, if I'm reading your forecast correctly, you're only anticipating about $236,000 of fare revenue for it once if we were to reinstate fares.
So for this budget year. Actually, no. What you're reading there. So let me go back here. You're reading the difference between forecast.
Oh, I'm reading the difference. Oh, okay, right. I was reading the wrong. Okay, thank you.
So we're expecting group passes. We're expecting cash fares and passes.
Oh, I see. Got it. Thank you. So we're actually expecting 2.67 million.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Gotcha. That makes more sense.
So it's not that different from what we originally budgeted, really.
Next, we have Josh, and then followed by Stephen.
Oh, I'll let Stephen go first. I can wait.
Great. Go ahead, Stephen.
Thanks, Josh. This is quick. Just following up on that fare question. Mm-hmm. So 2.6 is the estimate. How does that compare to a normal year in air quotes?
Yeah, so the adopted budget here already took into account the drop in fares that we expected. So if I look at our fares from last year, my recollection, well, actually, let me get back to you to make sure I give you that correct number of what the drop was. So I will send that to you.
Okay,
I remember that I did it during the adopted budget, but I don't want to give you misinformation. So let me check that and give that the right number to you.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Appreciate your presentation. I'm just curious of how the 2.6, of course, compares to what we would normally expect in a normal year. Of course, this is not a normal year, but just trying to gauge.
It's about 50%, Stephen.
Oh, thanks, Mark.
Yeah.
Do we have other questions or comments?
Yeah, I can
if
go.
Not, oh, Don, is that you?
Oh, no, it's Josh. I can
we
go.
Wait, maybe Don? Oh, I'm sorry, Josh. That's right. You want to go to Josh. And then, Don, if you want, I couldn't tell if you were waving. You can go after Josh.
First of all, Christina, this is really fantastic. This is a ton of work. Thank you so much for laying this out so clearly and helping us and the community understand the issues here and the trade-offs. This is really incredibly valuable. I want to say for people who, you know, we have over 30 attendees, in addition to, you know, the board members and staff who are present here, like, I just want to remind people, we said when we passed this budget, hey, we don't know what's going to happen this year. We're going to come back and talk about this at least a couple of times during the year. So this is sort of the first example of this, but we should expect another kind of, you know, mid-course assessment and maybe correction later in the fiscal year. But this is exactly the material we need for it. So thank you. I do want to say something that I really don't want to get lost, because I feel like AJ and Mark did a great job talking about this at the budget committee already back in 2019. We had become, as Christina mentioned, but Christina, you mentioned very briefly, so I want to make sure people hear this. We had essentially just started dipping into federal funds
that are really supposed to be, I think it's fair to say, for capital projects. We had just sort of padded our operating revenues with that. And AJ and Mark had sort of brought to us, hey, we need to sort of rethink this, or we are giving away a bunch of flexibility. So we are, in addition to responding to the pandemic and, you know, sort of crazy economic upheaval, we're actually trying to change our fiscal structure in a deeper way here. And so I appreciate that you have brought that into the discussion here explicitly, because I think that's important work that AJ had led, and I want to make sure we don't lose track of it. I do want to just make sure we pin a couple of the numbers here to our understanding that we've had in the conversation before. You have, and I can't, I'm not sure I know this slide exactly, Christina, but if you can move around and find this.
Sure, no problem.
You have the total number of service hours in there.
I think this is what we budgeted, and there's the current, and there's the
yeah, there we go. So so projected hours, Mark, this 202,000 is our fall, is our plan for fall service. Is that correct?
No, it's not. That 202 is the projected annualized service hours throughout the whole year. So come June 30th, we look back, we'll say, well, our annualized service hours are 202,000. Our current September 27th bid service hours on an annualized basis are about 187,000. And so we plan on again increasing in February timeframe, and so, but we anticipate that the annualized hours will be 202,384.
Okay, great. Thank you. And I don't think we should just sit here and do a bunch of multiplication out loud, but I do want to say that there, I guess as I try to grapple with this, let me sort of say how I'm understanding this, and then I'm curious to hear people comment on this, especially Christina and Mark. Most of our discussion to date has been centered around the service hours number, but Christina has pointed out that we also have this cost per service hour that has moved around from what it normally is. And so as we talk about this, I think we maybe in the future, as we bring this back to the board level, we really need to be thinking about both of those, like how are we actually bringing the cost per hour down, and then also what is the total offering, which is really I think what's going to matter most to the community. But this is nicely presented. Maybe we'll need to see another version of this at some point, but this is really helpful the way you brought it to us, Christina. So thank you.
Thank you. For now. And yes, that is correct, Josh, what you asked, that in order to meet that we have to bring the cost per service level down, but that can't happen until we can change the way we're operating, which is we're operating in a health first, public health first approach.
Thank you.
I've got a question for Mark to piggyback on Josh's question. So the projected hours is based on the idea that we will probably be increasing the number of hours as we get farther into the next calendar year.
That's correct. We've got the Santa Clara station is going to come on board in February. And so we are planning a service redesign somewhat around that, which will include increases in service. So the answer is yes, we're going to be increasing service in February. And we'll learn a lot fairly quickly from the September 27th bid when it goes into effect, to see how overloads and all those things play out. So we'll be keeping a really close eye on that.
Thank you, Mark. And then Christina, back to you, if you don't mind. When I'm looking at one of your slides about the sustainable level of service, so it's looking like if your assumptions hold true and we go ahead and implement the increases of service, like Mark was saying, then we look okay, right? If we don't, and this is if we don't really, I don't know if it's the right way to phrase it, if we don't really do anything else, and everything and all the assumptions are hold true, this is an accurate picture of what the rest of the year looks like.
So this 232 223 is based on 166 cost per revenue service hour. So that is what we had in 2000, you know, prior to we had the pandemic, right? So we can't increase it to this level because that's not where we're at right now. We're at, so if you go here, we're actually at the 237, right? That's where we are now, right? But we're projecting that we are going to bring the cost down to 208, and then we will be fine. We'll not go over budget if we're at the 202 cost per service, 202 projected revenue service hours.
Oh, okay.
Does that answer your question?
It does. And I mean, and one of the reasons I'm asking these questions is one, I just want to get a better handle of trying to see what the board might need, what kinds of decisions it might need to make, but also if we wanted to try to meet some of the needs of our riders in different ways, how much wiggle room we have money-wise. And I feel like what I'm seeing is that there is the possibility of that. And just to give you a more concrete example, like, you know, and you've heard me say this before, before I was always a proponent of reduced fares or maybe even a no fare system. And I'm wondering if during this pandemic situation and other things that are going on that, you know, perhaps we continue to extend, and that's not a me decision, that's an entire board decision, of course. But whether that's even fiscally reasonable or possible given what we have. Does that make sense what I'm trying to get at in terms of our flexibility?
Well, that would impact your sustainable level of service because the sustainable level of service is based on a certain level of revenue coming in that includes your fares and your group passes. And so if you eliminate, and also at the time that we were looking at it, it included all of those pieces as revenue items that we would be able to use to pay for service. So you would impact the, so then that would mean that this number here of 223 would be lower if you're talking about a sustainable level of service. So if the costs right. stayed the same, your revenues are gonna go down. So your resources are not gonna be 49.8.
No, right, I understand. Yeah, yeah. I'm just seeing what we have to be able to work with.
If you went up to 223 and you were able to, so and you use the CARES Act dollars to get to that level, you would have to do a supplemental budget because we would exceed the budget is what we would, but then you would be able to sustain that level of service, assuming that we got back to 166 cost per revenue hour in the following year. Does that make sense?
Well, I think I understand. I understand what you're saying. Yeah. Did you have more?
No, I mean, did I answer your question?
You did. Yeah. Yeah, I'm sorry. I thought you had more in it and it got cut out. Thanks, Christina. Josh, is that a new hand up or did you?
Yeah, I have just a little more. It really follows on what you just said. Thank you, Carl. Christina, that's a good explanation, though I do think we're going to have to try to figure out how we can sort of fiddle with these numbers usefully as a board and get comfortable with the trade-offs because it does get a little complicated. I guess I want to say one other thing that I think we as a board have to wrestle with. We definitely need to look at this through the lens of what is a sustainable level of service. And Christine is absolutely right to present that. At the same time, we have to think about what we're going to take, you know, what sort of hit we're going to take in transition. This is probably not the year to insist on a sustainable level of service. Or to insist on meeting all our targets. And sure enough, we are spending more per revenue hour, right? We're spending dramatically more because we're in these crazy, unfortunate circumstances. So I do think there is going to be more conversation to have in this fiscal year about what we want to do. How do we want to use the remainder of the CARES Act dollars, for example? This will sound like I'm contradicting myself because I said I really appreciated the work that
AJ has led to change this structural flaw in our budget where we were sort of filling the budget hole with the federal money, but maybe we do want to think differently about that in the short term if we can be careful with it. And then we also have to look out for additional federal stimulus that may surface. I think that's sort of been on and off the table at the federal level. So I do think we should remain open to other things we would do that don't look like sustainable level of service as Christina has defined it here, just because we will continue to be in this transitional phase. But I still really appreciate the framework that you provided here, Christina. Thank you.
No problem. And Josh, if you if it is increased beyond a sustainable level of service, then when we're no longer in the pandemic, and if we were to get back to the 166 cost per revenue hour, unless our revenues increase, we would have to use some of the federal dollars that that would be otherwise used for community investments to pay for that service.
Yeah, and I should clarify, I'm not advocating that we blow past that, level of revenue hours, but I'm saying if we were to accept a higher level, like a higher cost per revenue hour, then that number at the bottom looks quite different. I mean, as you were pointing out, maybe we end up feeling like it's, you know, below 200 because we have this higher cost structure. We may want to sustain that in the short term if we think we're going to sort of get back to different circumstances within a year or two or something like that. So I just want to make sure we don't lose track of the fact that what LTD provides is not just important, on a regular day, it's especially important in this sort of a painful period of transition. And so we have to kind of think about what sort of, financially sustainable thing we're doing longer term, but we also need to think about the moment. That was the only point I was making.
Great. Any other comments or questions? Well, I just want to say really quickly that I didn't mean to say that the board would dive into the budget and be that quite that directive, but I think it's important for us to have enough understanding so that if we make requests, they're reasonable and not quote unquote crazy things that we ask staff to do. So, but once again, Christina, thank you for enlightening us on our current budget situation. And with that, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Great. Let's go ahead and move ahead to our next item, which is the fiscal year 2021 COVID-19 plan. AJ, are you ready to go?
I am. I wanted to kind of let you guys digest all the financials because they're really key to this next item. So the two items really built on each other so that there's a clear understanding of what this agenda item is. So this agenda item is to ask the board to adopt a resolution. There are four recommendations here that really talk about how we will plan to continue the COVID-19 plan going forward. There might be other things that the board may like to consider, but I wanted to say that the first level is the fact that we talked about in Christina's agenda item, what a financial sustainable level of service is. So there's been a lot of discussion amongst the board is being that we're in a COVID-19 environment, like what's the plan? The board adopted with the presumption that the service hours would be 254,000, yet we're nowhere near that. So this item really addresses kind of that at this point, we're looking at a financial sustainable level of service based on the information that Christina presented in her presentation. I think that was slide number 9, in case we need to reference it. But it also provides an opportunity for the board here, because this is an action item for the board to determine that if they're a sustainable level of service, if the board has a different expectation than what was presented. The other area here is an operational level of service for the remainder. And in this agenda item, I'm explaining that an operational level of service includes adding frequency to routes that already are scheduled to operate. in order to reduce the passengers from being passed up due to passenger loads of 20 passengers on 40 foot and 30 passengers on 60 foot. So the board may recall, and in the board package, we do have the ridership data, and Tom did a much more of a breakout of the passenger loads. If you recall, in all of your weekly meetings, Tom would present every week those routes and how we, when we had passenger capacity over the 20 passengers or the 30 passengers. And the reason for that is because we have measured out our fleet and have determined that that is like the optimal amount of people that allow for the 3 feet distancing. We of course sometimes allow a few more because there are passengers that do travel together and they're not required to keep the 3 foot distancing, but from others not traveling together. So what we've looked at is based on the demand that we know is said to be able to operationally sustain and not pass people up or not be able to keep that 3 foot, the service increases, the sustainable level, which was presented, which was approximately annualized 202,000 hours. That's our first portion of the plan. Are there any questions? Let me keep going because there'll probably be a lot of questions on the different, but I definitely wanted to explain what a operational and financially sustainable level was and why that was spelled out that way. The second portion of the plan is to hire frontline and support personnel needed to sustain that operational and financial level of service. And I do provide an example. And if you recall at the previous board meeting, staff presented information about their plan of how they can sustain the current operation. We have 6 months of lessons learned of what we've done well and what we need to improve on. And we know that that personnel will be needed to increase the service, but also to support that service. So that's the second one. The third one is we know that we will need to continue to invest in capital projects that directly reduce LTD's operating cost and to provide longer term financial sustainability, such as electric buses, some more technology, and then support equipment that will be needed. So as we look at becoming more efficient so that we can put more service out, we know that we'll have to make capital investments that move us in that direction. And then the last one, of course, is work that staff is working on a monthly basis. Well, we're actually meeting like 3 times a month, but at some point we hope that it goes down to a monthly meeting, is pursue competitive grants that are offered through the state and the federal programs to allow us to bring in more money for either operating or capital expenditures that will also allow us to be successful during this COVID-19, but also be able to carry us past that. As Christina presented in her financials, that we will need that revenue to be sustainable. So those are the 4 key elements we felt were important to bring to the board for adoption. I will take any questions and be happy to explain this further if needed.
Thank you for that presentation, AJ. Yeah, are there any questions? And I'll put myself in the queue as people who want to go first go. Yeah, Josh, go ahead.
I'm happy to wait for others to go if people have any clarifying questions.
Oh yeah, sure. Yeah, just checking in, Don, Caitlin, Stephen. Nothing there. Hey, Josh, I think it's you. Then I'll follow you.
AJ, thank you for laying this out. I feel like you've done a great job and really like transparently shared the thinking behind the operational strategies here. I'm actually a little confused why we would need to adopt these things. So maybe we should talk about that. I mean, some of it, like number 2 on the list of the 4 major points, is totally an operational thing. And we, you know, trust you to make those decisions anyway. Number three, we've already, I mean, we already passed a budget that has, you know, a ton of capital projects in there. And we had sort of this discussion about the importance of moving forward with those things. Number four, again, kind of the same thing. Like we would always hope to be pursuing, you know, those potential competitive projects. So I guess say maybe a little more about what you want or need from us, because I feel like this is just, this doesn't feel like a separate decision. And I feel like if anything, it may sort of take us off the hook for revisiting the budget later in the fiscal year. And I definitely don't want to do that, because I do think we should discuss it at least one more time. Have I misunderstood the intent here?
No, actually this agenda item was to address some of the questions that you have posed, Josh, through series of meetings, requesting that we become more transparent, but also bring this for the board to approve at the policy level to ensure that the board is on board with the direction and the decisions that we have been making. So this really provides that level of transparency, but also provides the board an opportunity to actually state that this is the direction they desire for us to continue while we look at this COVID-19. I think the big decision, of course, is the information that Christina also provided, is that although the board doesn't adopt the 254,000 service hours, they do adopt a board with that presumption, right? Given what we knew at that time, that's what we adopted. And we knew we would not reach that 254,000 as soon as we saw all the requirements that needed to be met to sustain service following the state guidelines and keeping a public health first model to keep everybody safe. So we knew that we would not meet that, although, it's something that we use as a projection at the time we completed that. And I think you had asked me to bring back that the board was the one to make that decision, and that was really not at the staff level. So I wanted to make sure that I did allow the board to weigh in. The board can choose not to adopt it and just defer this to an operational decision making, or the board can choose to amend this or reject it and request something completely different. But I wanted to make sure that I responded to some of your requests. So this is really to address that and hope that it provides you the level of information you need to be able to make informed decisions at the board level.
Yeah, that's great. So let me sort of split this into a couple of different issues, because I think there are quite different things going on. First of all, if people remember, actually, if you don't remember, go back and check minutes. I said at the time, I thought it was impossible for us to reach 254,000 annualized hours. So I said that when we actually adopted the budget, it seemed wildly implausible. We had sort of the numbers had you know, collapsed. We stopped service for a while, right? A little while. So it's not quite accurate to say that was a projection at the time. We actually knew it was wrong, and we just forged ahead knowing that we would have to have these conversations to revisit it. So that's why I think it's so important that we actually have these budget conversations. So I you'll notice when I sort of went through the pieces, actually I left out number one. Let me come to that in a second. On the operational things, I actually, you know, to Caitlin's point earlier, I don't think we should be interfering at the operational level. You've brought the rationale to us and told us what you're doing, but I don't think it's actually appropriate for us to pass resolutions about that operational level. I think we should have the discussions and make sure we understand from you what you're doing. But I think you've done that, and I think you've done that really well on points 2, 3, and 4. On number one, I actually, and this goes back to what I said to Christina's presentation, I actually don't think we should adopt that, because I don't think the notion of a financially sustainable level of service is the only thing that we should have in mind for this year, especially if it's through the lens of like a high cost per revenue hour. Then that level is going to be too low. So I'm reluctant to do that because I want us to actually have this sort of substantive discussion later in the fiscal year. Anyway, that's my instinct, but I'm curious to hear from others.
Thanks, Josh. You know, I was certainly AJ doesn't have to come to us to do the things that she's has presented to us. But I think in the context of what we've been doing all summer long, I mean, this is the way I look at it, which is that we've been having these conversations. The board has been ready. In fact, if anything, I would actually say this is exactly the kind of thing that I would want before the board, because we are trying to react and adapt to this kind of situation. And so, and then on that point, I would just want to say, AJ, I think you did a great job of gathering information and listening to some of the concerns that were brought to us, both by the public and by employees. These hit all of the things that I wanted to do or thought that we should be doing, which is to hire more people back if we could, increase public safety. You know, all of these things are, I think, good for our organization as well as our ridership. Or writers rather, and especially with public safety, I can't say enough, you know, that's not just for our writers, but that's also for our employees as well. So I think this is great. I actually think this is perfect for the board to discuss publicly and then to have it laid out like this, so everyone knows that we know, that you know, that everybody knows. So I'm very comfortable supporting this. Any other comments or questions for AJ? Okay, well, in that case, I will entertain a motion. Yeah, go ahead, Josh.
I mean, I guess I just so it's clear, I don't want to sound like I'm disagreeing with people when actually I don't disagree. Yeah. I agree with everything Carl said about the substance here. And AJ, I am really grateful at how clearly you have laid out these things and as you talked through the rationale for these pieces. So don't get me wrong on that at all. I'm just not quite sure, a sort of thumbs up, thumbs down policy decision doesn't actually seem like what we're doing here. I mean, like, right? I mean, I think you and Mark have brought tons of information over the last, you know, few meetings, and especially right here. And so that's what we need to discuss. But I'm not really sure it's not quite a on most of this here, it's not really a policy decision. That's my point. I think you have explained yourself really well, and that's what we need to hear at the board level.
Thanks, Josh. I'll entertain a I see Steven's hand is up. Go ahead, Steven. Oh, Steven, you might be double muted.
How about now? Thank you very much, Carl. Appreciate that. I started off with thank you, AJ, for the presentation. Appreciated. And maybe I'm jumping the gun, jumping below to the upcoming operational changes, but I just want to be clear here. I'm not sure how I see it clearly called out. I like the considerations part. Addressing some of the ATU bus operator concerns that we've heard about safety right now. I don't see that specifically called out in point one or two. And correct me if I'm wrong, AJ, if that's assumed, because that's mentioned in the upcoming operational changes. Thank you.
Actually, that's a good point. Stephen, I don't think I elaborated more on that. In point number one, some of the challenges our operators have voiced is having to either pass up passengers or at times, due to the lack of frequency on some of our routes, having to be directed to load more than what they feel is safe. So that's where you see the report that was brought to you guys on a regular basis, in which we do report what we call overloads. And that is instances in which we either the driver chooses or we ask the driver because of where the location is to transport more than the 20 passengers. And because of that, our operators have voiced strong concerns about doing so. So that is addressed by saying that the added frequency will help to alleviate some of those loads and really address the COVID-19 concerns. And then in the added personnel area, in point number two, the plan that we brought forward included adding not just bus operators, but adding some supervisory personnel and adding more public safety. And that's an area that we'll continue to look at to ensure that we are supporting the response to the operators, the challenges that they are facing as they're out there, in which individuals who may choose to take their mask off after they're in the bus and the operator has to make an announcement to them and the person becomes irate and and it causes disruption to their service. I know that there was a conversation during the financial portion about a fareless system. Our operators have voiced their concern that if we go too fareless, we're going to need a lot more public safety because that creates other sets of challenges. And they have asked and pleaded that we restore fares as soon as possible. Of course, we know that to keep them safe, we're going to have those barriers in place and those retrofittings, of course. And that's part of number three, the capital investments that we're making. So one, two, and three really address the concerns that operators have asked us to really support them more. It's been 6 months and they see that conditions are not improving and instead deteriorating. So without us taking some mitigating action, their working conditions continue to erode. So that one, two, and three are intended to support that. But yes, it is not clear. So thank you for pointing that out.
Thank you very much for that detail. Of course, it sounds like you are doing a fine job along with Mark and working with the ATU to just to make sure that the legitimate concerns that they have with some of the troublesome passengers that we unfortunately sometimes have to deal with, just want to make sure that their safety and their concerns are being heard. Thank you.
Great. I see Don next, and I just want to make sure everyone knows the time. I will try to wrap up in the next few minutes so that we can move to finish their agenda and go to an executive session. Go ahead, Don.
Well, I'm a bit confused as it just sounds like all this discussion is, well, I shouldn't do the resolution. I don't feel any hesitation to just adopt this resolution. If it helps give the staff, imprimatur, so to speak, of the board, say, go ahead and do this as we trust them to understand the situation. So I would just go ahead and adopt this resolution.
Are you making a motion, Don, by any chance?
I shall. I'll move the adoption of LTD Resolution 2020-09-16-056. It is hereby resolved that LTD Board of Directors adopt fiscal year 2021 COVID-19 plan as follows. One, increase transit service to the operational and financial sustainable level for the remainder of fiscal year 2021.
It's okay, Don, in the interest of time, I'm just going to say as stated in the packet, because you've noted the resolution. So Don's made the motion. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Caitlin has seconded the motion. Just making sure, no comments before I move to a roll call vote.
Yeah, I guess I need to just be really clear. Like I am really supportive of a ton of these the changes that AJ has laid out here. I'm not just supportive, but I'm grateful because I have asked for this. I'm grateful for the really public rationale. I feel like we're not actually having the right discussion here about operations versus policy, and so. I'm going to vote for this because I want to give staff the you know, the go ahead on this for the reasons that Don laid out. But you guys, we have to make sure that we don't take that as like we have checked out of these issues indefinitely. We need to bring back this budget question in this fiscal year. That is what we said when we approved the budget. And so I do think there's a little bit of ambiguity there, but I'm fine with it as long as, you know, now that that's on the record.
Yeah. Thanks, Josh. That's a fair point. Moving on to the roll call vote, Caitlin Vargas.
Aye.
Joshua Scope.
Aye.
Don Norden.
Aye.
Even Yet.
Aye.
And I, Carly, also vote aye. So motion passes. In the interest of time, I just want to make sure, but I don't want to skip over it too much. The remaining items are no comment necessarily needs to be made, but are there any questions that people like to ask about any of the departmental reports? Okay, hearing none, you should have all received an email about us moving into an executive session that will be an actually separate session from this. So everyone will need to log off and then follow instructions to get back on the new one. So that being said, I will go ahead and adjourn this meeting, and then we will initiate the executive session in the new Zoom meeting. So great. So thank you, everyone. Thank you, members of the public, for being here. Please stay safe and healthy, and we will see you at the next LTD meeting. And for the rest of us who are to go to the executive session, I'll see you soon. So meeting adjourned.